When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome, everybody. This is the Rugby Rant, episode 189. I'm the big guy, Scott Farrar. That's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt.
Nope.
And with us today, I don't think he's been on the show multiple times, but he hasn't been on the show recently because, you know, he's a coach, and then he's the director of rugby, and then he's a general manager. I mean, this guy changes his position in club rugby like every 3 months. Anyway, TJ Olsen, how are you, buddy?
Good, brother. Thank you. Yeah, I do like to switch it up every now and then, keep everyone on their toes. But yeah, it's good. You know how excited I get to chat footy with all you fellas. So it's going to be a good time. Can't wait to get ripping and let's go.
Yeah, he always brings it to the house when he comes on the Rugby Rant. It's a lot of fun to have him on. Always knowledgeable, always has his nose in things. And so it's great for him to share his understanding, experiences, and perspective with the Rugby Rant and all our fans.
Absolutely. And again, we always talk about the West Coast perspective because me and Rob don't have it. TJ is one of our guys. No, I'm serious. You know, it's
you're right.
Let's tell the fans here.
You know, the geographic map of rugby in the United States, right?
Me and Rob really try.
We got Midwest, and then we got West Coast.
We really try to have, you know, a decent snapshot, you know, every so often of fans. You know what I mean? So, you know, obviously TJ, an LA guy. LA fan, has the penis head acorn logo going on. You
know. Hey, we said it off camera. I'm not bringing it on. Just stop talking about my logo. It's come on. best logo in the league. Let's go. Come on.
Gotta love it.
I like the colors.
Yeah, the colors are great. I love the colors.
Yeah, I think the colors are definitely better and they're resonating a lot more with the fans now. I think especially with the previous regime, we won't go down that rabbit hole, but having the pink and the light blue was a bit jarring for a lot of old rugby fans, having some traditional blue and yellow. And I think it really speaks to the LA fan base. It's a lot more.
Absolutely.
It's mellow and chill, man. It's mellow and chill.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
And UCLA adjacent, you know, UCLA.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I can wear this at a UCLA game and no one will even bat an eye. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. It's good to kind of get in there. Anyway, we're going to head to Around the Pitch. DJ, kick us off, buddy.
All right. So I've got two ones. As you said, I've got all the know-how of the West Coast. So I've got two really local grassroots ones. The first one is the Battle of the Bone. It's been an old boys tournament that's been going on close for 20 years now, but missed a couple of years due to COVID. It will be making its return. It is the Santa Barbara Grunions that play the Santa Monica Old Boys, the Dolphins. And I think it's a really good competition to just spark some excitement around old boys rugby and just have like the new guard and the old guard really gel together and get to hang out, swap war stories and go through that. So if anybody's interested, it will be happening next month in November. You can follow it on the Santa Monica and Santa Barbara Instagram page down at Ealing's Park in Santa Barbara. The second one is more world-renowned. I think everyone will know the name Antoine Dupont. Santa Monica was fortunate enough to have him feature at a Beach Touch game. Shout out to the Beach Box, a Beach Touch organization that goes every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Randomly, we were able to just get him on Instagram, come down, and we had the best nine, arguably, in the world come and play a bit of one-touch beach footy.
You don't suck.
Yeah,
no, what do you mean? I thought Dallin Stanford was there.
No, Dallin Stanford. He's a good player. He's got a good step, but yeah, no one can go past Antoine Dupont. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But yeah, if anybody wants the footage, check it out on Instagram on Santa Monica.
Gotta love it, Rob. What do you got?
Oh, well, two things of interest. I'll start with local first, then go a little bit more zoomed out approach, USA Rugby related. But first of all, at the local level, I have to do this one. D1A, huge matchup for Midwest supremacy at the club level for men's club rugby. The Chicago Lions traveled down to the St. Louis Bombers. It was a one-point affair up here in Chicago a couple weeks ago. And this one did not disappoint. 27-27 tie match at the end. What made this hilarious? Well, there are two great things. Number one, Preston, my guy, got to play against Nate Augsburger, and that was great to see. It's one of his idols, so he was pumped to be able to play against him. But the other thing was, so the Bombers are up by five. Richard Felton had hit a droppy to put them up by five, which was kind of slick. You don't see that in club rugby all the time. And then the 3 minutes left, the Lions come storming back. That kid that they had the Hounds drafted, Tunavaka or Kinevau, something like that. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Anyway, a kid from like Utah or something like that. Just a stud at number eight. Scores like he runs about 60 meters, offloads. Lions are, you know, they just are playing really good support ball, and they get in and score a try right in the near side corner. We happen to be sitting on the player side because my wife wasn't feeling so good. Couldn't get all the way across the pitch. So my mom had sat over there. So then they line up the kick, and their kicker's lining up the kick. And right as he's about to kick, my mom yells, and she stands up and goes, "Miss." And he missed. And so the referee was pissed because we'd been chatting him up all day. So what does he do? He allows them to re-kick because he thought it came from the bench.
God.
Right. Fortunately for the Bombers, he missed again. It was a tough kick, and it was tied at 27 all. I'd also like to recognize in USA side, Hope Rogers, 50 caps, 30 caps for Tess Fury. Against Ireland in the WXV, played in Vancouver, BC on October 11th. Congratulations to both those ladies. Heroic, Herculean effort on both their parts. Great to see.
Absolutely. So I'm going to finish it off. So we say, was it fair winds and following seas to Perry Baker calling it a day? Was he had 293 tries scored? I think he's second all time in the 7-series scoring list behind Dan Norton. He ranks seventh all-time points scored. He was the 2017 and 2018 men's sevens player, best sevens player in the world. I'm just going to read you what he wrote on his social media. After an incredible 10 years of representing the USA men's sevens program, the time has come for me to step away from the game that has shaped so much of my life. It has been an honor and a privilege to wear the jersey and represent my country on a world stage. From the moment I joined the team, I could never have imagined the experiences, the highs, lows, and the lifelong rugby the lifelong friendships rugby would give me. Year one of my journey was especially life-changing as I met my amazing wife, and together we built our family. To my wife and family, I could not have done this without you, your endless support and love. You've been my anchor, and I'm grateful for all the sacrifices you've made so I could pursue my dream. To my teammates, coaches, staff, and everyone at USA Rugby, thank you for believing in me, pushing me, and making every moment memorable. To fans, rugby isn't just a sport, it's a family, and you guys made me feel that everywhere I went. And to rugby itself, thank you for teaching me resilience, teamwork, and leadership that will live with me forever. As I step into the next chapter, I will carry with me all the lessons, memories, and connections this game has given me. I'm excited for what's to come and how I can continue to give back to this amazing sport. Thank you for being a part of my journey, and thank you, Perry Baker, for being a part of the USA Eagles for 10 years. Speaking of another Eagle, this is something interesting I found out. Sevens and 15s Eagle, Andrew Duertalu. He was an Olympian in 2016 with the Sevens team. I think he had like 22 appearances and a couple tries with the 15s team. Played for the Sunwolves, the Trailfinders, Warriors. I believe he ended his professional career with Seattle, then ended up playing with Nick Civetta and Eric Fry in the 2021 varsity match, you know, Oxford versus Cambridge, and I believe he was also man of the match. Interestingly enough, he started a position about 7 months ago, and he is actually on the Strategic Ventures team for business innovation at, believe it or not, the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee. So we actually have somebody, you know, who's steeped in rugby tradition, an Olympian in sevens rugby, who is in what we would call, I guess, the engine room, really, for the Olympics. You know, let's be honest, without all the logistics being set up and everything that the Olympic Committee does, the athletes couldn't do what they do, right? So I just wanted to point that out as I found that very interesting, that that's where he's currently working to not only, I'm sure, help, you know, rugby sevens on the Olympic venture, but to help all athletes, and him being an Olympic athlete himself and a professional athlete for a long time. You know, he has a lot of things, I'm sure, in his head that he can help guide this engine room to get the Olympic Committee on track. I thought it was very interesting, guys.
I think it's really cool when you see people like that from a rugby perspective come into an Olympic based position, because I think, like, correct me if I'm wrong, if you guys think differently, but I think a lot of rugby individuals, they bring a different perspective. You get like people from track and field, from other sports that have really big budgets, come from really affluent backgrounds, or like have gotten a lot of opportunities, where a lot of rugby players have picked up the sport later, or they've had to go through a grind to even just get to the position. I think it's really good to have that really good perspective. So it's an all-rounded insight into it, as opposed to just little bits and pieces.
Yeah, they don't have as much commercialization of their image and likeness, exactly, and things like that. So it brings that kind of perspective. I agree with you, TJ.
And I think because they don't have that, I would say, I mean, up until the MLR, they didn't have that professional standard. Like, you know, we have the World Championships and the USA Championships every year in track and field, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, most of these guys played their rugby on the club level and have an understanding of how grassroots efforts can take hold and find guys like Perry Baker to move over and play rugby and have a great career, you know?
Yeah.
Guys like Carlin Isles, you know, starting rugby late in life after a football career and being, you know, one of the fastest men in rugby, right? So I think you're absolutely right. He's going to bring a unique perspective to, you know, the American Olympic Committee and how I think, not just in rugby, but how grassroots efforts can capture some of these athletes. Mm-hmm. That may be good in a different sport. You know, I always love to say Alev Kelter was a friggin' hockey player. She played for, you know, University of Wisconsin, mm-hmm, women's hockey, you know, perennial top five program, and unfortunately didn't make the Olympic team. And somebody was like, "Have you ever tried rugby?" Because they saw her play hockey, you know, and boom, now you have Alev Kelter, bronze medalist, you know.
It's so funny how many times that happens. Be like, "You want to try rugby?" And then you're just like, okay, bang, boom, you're in there. It's awesome.
You know, it's great. It's great. But today we're actually talking, unfortunately our buddy MLR Stats, James Dealey, isn't going to be on the episode with us, cause this is like his wheelhouse of player and coach movement. So actually we're going to be talking today about coach movement, which coaches have left, which coaches have taken their position, where there's some questions, and we'll be answering two questions. The first one is essentially on paper with the current coach moves, who made the best move, right, on paper, to get their coaches, their coaching set up, right? And then the second question is going to be, out of all these guys, who's going to execute, who we think is going to execute going into the 2025 season? So before we get into it, boys, I got to hit the intro again. So I'm going to give you guys the lowdown of changes here now. Shout out to Rob. He did this for me. I was super busy at work, and Rob kind of, you know, did the research on this. So shout out to the Hammer. So we're going to start with San Diego. Danny Lee out as head coach. John Momenti coming in. We're not sure forwards and backs who's really there right now. I mean, we know that Corbs was there in a capacity a little bit. We're not sure if he's currently there. RFCLA. Steve Brett out, Steve Hoyle's in, Dave Dennis coming in as assistant coach, and Sam Harris, formerly of the Hounds, going over as the attack coach. Let's talk about the Hounds. Sam Harris out. Rob Weber going to the Saracens. Dave Clancy out. We have Chris Latham coming in. Todd Dammers coming in for the forwards. Noel Reed for the backs. Nola Gold, Corey Brown out. Dan Lee comes over from San Diego. And I think Kane Thompson is still with the forwards. And then let's talk about New England. You have Scott Matthew out, Will Webster out. Was it Ryan Martin coming in as the head coach? Walt Senegal coming in as an assistant. And I forgot who else was the assistant, Rob.
Simonoa.
So those are all the changes coming in for so far. It was not, you know, as of the recording right now.
Yeah.
It's 9 p.m. Eastern, 10:15, 2024. Those have been the changes. We did ask our buddy MLR Stats if he had a graphic. Unfortunately, he did not. He was going to make it next week for his website. We're going to try and poach it. Shout out to James Dealey. It was his birthday a couple days ago. Happy birthday. But so, again, the first question we're going to ask, out of those changes on paper, who do you think came out the best? So we'll start with TJ.
Okay, so I think with my choice for this category, I really want to give props to two teams because I think they're going to make significant impacts. Probably not the biggest impact. I think with the, like you said, with the landscape of the entire league shifting significantly, the two teams that I think made really good signings, Chicago with the signing of Chris Latham. I think he's a tremendous coach. And has such a strategic mind around attack. He can utilize weapons that he already has in the team at his disposal. And I think San Diego, with the signing of John Menetini, he's got a track record of taking teams from the middle of the pack and making them great. You saw it in the Shoot Shield. He won three Shoot Shields in Australian Club Championship with, I think, Eastwood it was. So I'm excited to see what he produces with a well-oiled machine that just needs a few tweaks and some developmental players to get the right coaching to go from a contender to the contender in the Western Conference. But for the coaching staff that I think is going to make the biggest impact, I don't think you can go past Stephen Hoyles and the RFCLA coaching staff. It's not because I'm blinded by loyalty. It's not because I don't want to get run out of LA, and that's obviously a possibility that I'm saying this, but you have to understand that you have to look at, I'm saying they're going to make the biggest impact, not they're going to win or they're going to like have the best team on paper, because I'm not delusional, but the impact that Hoyles and his support staff are going to make with this particular team is going to be astronomical. You can't deny that, because if you look at Steve Brett, his coaching staff, they were behind the eight ball as well as the whole organization. They started late. They had a variety of variables that they had to go through. They signed players from all over after the destruction of Atlanta and New York, and the list goes on and on. I could be here all day about all the things that they struggled with, because I luckily got to see a lot of it firsthand. But luckily there are guys like Adam Fryer, Mark Carter, who came from the Giltinis, and they were able to make the team hum. And from start to finish, they were able to get to it. And unfortunately, Stephen Brett, he just wasn't the right culture fit for LA with obviously the trials and tribulations he had to go through and just a variety of different things. But Hoyles comes into a system that is already ready to go. Do they have the best players? No, they don't. It's impossible for them to have the best players coming from the transition that they've had. But the one thing that you can always come back to with Stephen Hoyles, and obviously I'll talk about the support staff as well, is that it's not just about coming to training and doing drills and prepping for your opponent each week and just getting the job done on Saturday or Sunday. I got to see firsthand with the Giltinis. I get to talk to a lot of people over at Randwick and other places that he's coached, like with the Sevens and things like that. People want to play for him. He's a great culture fit. He's able to go into the change room and he's able to have a chat with people and talk to them like human beings and not just like pieces of a puzzle or commodities at a disposal. And I think you really see that with great coaches who can build rapport with their players. Like you listen to Jace Ryan, who's the forwards coach for the All Blacks currently. The reason why he's done so well in a lot of retrospects is not because just he knows his stuff and he's a great coach. He's able to build that rapport with his players. He comes in and in his hotel room when they're traveling, he's got a box of peppermint tea that he always travels with, and he's like, come have a cup of tea with me and we'll chat about footy, we'll chat about just anything, your family, just build that rapport with the boys, and people want to come, want to play for that person, and then he'll give those little tidbits about how they can fix it. The same thing goes for Hoyle's support staff, Sam Harris and Dave Dennis. Like, Rob, you could probably talk to him about Sam Harris better than I can. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him in person, but I've heard a lot of great things about him culture-wise, his knowledge around the game. Like, you always hear good things about Sam Harrison and what he brings to the table. So as an attack coach, he's able to encompass Hoyles' vision and just, like, plug in seeds from his experience as a head coach and as a coach and really refine this group that we've got. And Dave Dennis, like, he's got a mountain of experience as a captain, just as a player, and he's a great coach as well. He's able to spot things in the lineout. He's able to spot things in phase play and defense that can really make a team just jump up 50 yards. Whether they're going to be able to be like a significant impact on the table, I don't know, because you've got to wait and see who they're going to re-sign, who they're going to sign in the offseason, all that type of stuff. But if you look at everything encompassing, not just the team and the coaching staff, I think the RFCLA team are going to make the biggest impact.
I think, I think you're right. I don't like to you talk about Sam Harris, and I think he's a great coach. I think there's it's tough. I've explained this to Rob before, and it made sense when I explained it to Rob, but I don't know if it's going to come off. No, I'm serious. Like, I don't know how it's
going to come off. I don't remember. Did it make sense to me?
No, it made sense to you. It made sense to you and a bunch of other people, but, it's especially from ownership, if they're American, I think they expect more of the Nick Saban, Jim Harbaugh type of head coach, right?
Yeah.
And then usually the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator is a little more friendly, is a little more laissez-faire, depending, the position coaches in football are a little more on with the guy's level. And I think Sam does that well, and I just didn't think it was a good fit as the head coach.
So this like assistant coach position, he's able to build that rapport. He's able to jump in as the friend / coach and really get the most out of the boys. And Hoyles is kind of just the guy
that's what I think. And that's what I think is going to happen. And I know that's the way Hoyles did it in LA originally. And he let his assistant coaches kind of fly and do what they needed to do to get their guys prepared. And I think this is a perfect situation for Sam Harris coming off of Chicago, Rob.
Yeah, let me just ask TJ this question, because you probably have a bit more insider knowledge, or at least closer to the bone, so to speak, than the rest of us over here in the Midwest or the East Coast. But it's my understanding that Stephen Hoyles is the director of rugby, and it doesn't seem like there's a head coach yet. Now, maybe he assumes that role. What are you hearing there?
So from my understanding, I think it is like a bit of a mix. I think it is, I could be completely wrong, but from my understanding of what I've heard in kind of the pipeline is he takes on that director of rugby position, oversees everything. But there's also people behind the scenes that have not really had that title, but have had a lot of say over academy and other things like that, where we can kind of refine pieces and he oversees the big picture stuff. That's my understanding from the signing. But then again, a lot of this has only happened really recently. So there could be news that comes out in the near future that goes, he will have a more, I guess, eagle-eyed view role as opposed to a head coaching role. But if I'm Hoyles and I want to have my best foot forward, I want to be in that head coaching role, because you saw him at the Giltinis, as soon as he took over from his predecessor, DC did a great job at putting the team and winning a championship. Hoyles took it and ran with it. If not the whole debacle of the Giltinis getting thrown out,
they were positioned.
I'm very confident they would have won a back-to-back title. So yeah, I think if I was the person who was giving him the opportunity and saying, this is what you want to do, he's got to be that head coach, because he does a great job at that.
Yeah, and I wonder if Rob, sorry to interrupt, I wonder if he's going to be the head coach that first year to see where Sam Harris or somebody else is, and then maybe next year step back to just director of rugby role, just as a transitional for the year. You know what I mean? Because it's got to be tough if you're going to be doing both roles, because especially in season, you got to be head coach in there. So I'm wondering if it's going to be more transitional for both, you know, him going in as a, as the head coach to transition somebody next season, while he's takes a slower transition to director of rugby role for 2026, you know?
Well, I think one thing to just jump in before I let you go, Rob, is that, like, I think if we use an American example, like Berkeley, if you've got Jack Clark, he's always been the director of rugby and the head coach, but he's always had an associate head coach. I think the thing you got to look at is that it doesn't always have to be black and white. Like a director of rugby doesn't always have to be this position and then he holds that for the year. They could have meetings and he could have say in certain aspects. And if a head coach or someone isn't getting the job done or is getting the job done and just need to refine these two pieces to get that extra 10%, it's in and out. And I think there's a possibility that could happen as well.
So in response to Sam Harris, first of all, I consider him a friend. He's a wonderful man. He is a gentleman of the highest order. I think his strength is that ability to establish and really develop relationships with players. I think he's very easy to get along with. He's very honest. I think the struggle that he had here was personnel, was really, you know, trying to make the personnel changes fit together. I've said it on many occasions that he had such a wealth of talent here that I think he was trying to meet everybody.
It's hard to put it all together.
Right. You know? But I mean, I think there was a lot of, essentially, I think he could have put together two pretty good, decent MLR sides with all the talent they had here. And the difficulty is, how do you make everybody happy? You know, if some guys aren't getting enough playing time, or they feel like that if they make a mistake, they're going to be out and they're going to get replaced, then you don't necessarily get the best out of players, and it can be difficult to get players to gel. And I think he struggled a little bit with trying to keep everybody engaged and make everybody make things happy, but get a continuity in his starting 15. With a director of rugby, with Hoyles being director of rugby, I think that will be consumed by Hoyles. And Sam Harris can do what he does best, which is connect with guys on the pitch and be a good coach.
I was laughing because, like, right now, if you look at collegiate football, NCAA football, if a guy's dropping a pass, he's fucking out. There's 13 guys behind him that are looking to take his spot. So I think we need to normalize the fact that these are now professional athletes in the MLR. This isn't a club scene. This isn't about, you know, making, you know, if a player's not competing up to a certain standard, they got to know that there's a guy hungry behind them. And it's twofold. One, that's how you become professionally successful. Two, that's how Scott Lawrence is going to start finding guys. You're going to find the guys who are hungry enough to put in the work to get better and beat out another guy mid-season if that guy's not putting in work. I just find it funny the way you phrased it, Rob. Like, you know, if I got to be honest, if I wouldn't want a player, if I was a coach, that's going to get mad because they weren't producing on the field and then I took them out and gave them less minutes.
Well, it's not about – I didn't mean it in that they weren't producing. I'm just suggesting that, you know, if a guy felt like if he got a niggle, if he got an injury, he had to take a seat, you know, in a match, that he was going to be replaced and he had struggled to find his way back in the side. You know what I'm saying?
Two words, Tom Brady.
No. Well, no.
Right?
No.
Yeah.
I agree with – Tom Brady's ethos and the perception that he brings to the effort that you should bring to every training session, every game, all that right. stuff. But it's also the reality of the league. We can't expect that we've got endless talent like the NFL does. I get what you're saying, Scott.
Correct. Yeah. But we still have to. I think the problem we have right now in USA Rugby is because we've tried to transition to this professional side, but then we still have attitudes that we take that aren't necessarily professional 100% of the time. You know what I mean? That's my point. And Tom Brady, you know, you had what's his face gets injured. Tom Brady comes in and wins 7 fucking Super Bowls. You know what I mean? It was next man up.
The quarterback that absolutely destroyed him on his roast coming in and I see his face. I didn't get concussed or something.
Yeah. You know?
It would have been my TB12 there.
but that happens all the time. You can look at Ohio State in 2016, right? Was it Dwayne Haskins gets hurt in the Michigan game, which is the last game of the season, and Cardale Jones comes in and wins a bowl game and a championship for Ohio State, and then next year Cardale Jones is the starter. So, like, I'm just saying, I think we need to make sure that this progression into professionalism is 100% across the board going into what year eight, year seven, year eight of MLR.
Yes.
You know,
I agree.
But Hammer, who do you have on paper with these changes? Who do you think made out the best?
So, again, it goes back to context, and I'm going to agree with TJ. I think it's RFCLA, and the biggest reason is because of where they can go. I think as I looked up and down this list of teams, I really felt like RFCLA with a 5-10-1 record and 32 points total, they can, I mean, they were last in the conference. So when you're talking about who's going to make the biggest jump in improvement, it's not hard to say and to say they are and point the finger at RFCLA just because there's so much room for improvement. There's only way to go is up. You know, conversely speaking, as I looked at this, I look at a team like New England, who Scott Matthey goes to Edinburgh as their, I think, as their tax coach, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, they win two championships back to back. So what does success mean for them, for this, for their new coaching regime? What does success mean? Well, anything less than a championship is a downgrade for them, right? So for them, the bar is pretty darn high. The expectations are high. The fans' expectations are high. And so in that regard, I really think that, you know, the LA team has a really good opportunity. You know, the Chicago Hounds, I hate to agree with TJ on all fronts, but I think they're another squad to look at too, simply again, because 8-7-1 with 45 points, they kind of eked into the playoffs a little bit. You know, three regular season wins on the hoof on the back end of their on the back end of the regular season, and they get into the playoffs. They get that third seed, and they win against the number two seeded NOLA Gold. And get to that conference final where they didn't play bad, but I think they would have liked a better performance. But nonetheless, you know, there's an opportunity there to perform better during the regular season, lock in maybe, you know, a little better seed and perform a little bit better in the playoffs. But again, something short of making it to the, you know, final, is that not a failure, but a downgrade, if you will. The expectations are high in Chicago as well. So that's why I put a nod towards LA.
Yeah, I would agree. I think LA on paper, if answering this first question, they've made the best out of what they've gotten. You know, we know the players that are going there, we know the successes they've had. But talking about Chicago real quick, I did like Todd Dammers coming in. The reason I like Todd coming in on the forward side is, you know, if you look at his history, you know, a lot of university rugby coaching in Australia, coached, he was in Japan with Rico. What are they? The black somethings. I got baby brain.
The black Rams.
Black Rams. And then he also coached a little bit in Spain on a Division II team. And what I think is good about that is he's used to the talent level we have in the MLR, where there could be a lot of disparity, and having to coach guys up to make that level in case there is an injury and things like that. Especially, you know, on the university level, we all play college rugby. You know, you have your seniors, you have your freshmen, you have your first year guys. And the biggest thing you're trying to do is train guys and give them the knowledge base to learn about the sport of rugby so they could be competent on the field. So I think Todd Dammers is going to come in with an understanding of that. I think that's going to help out the young front row guys that Chicago is definitely going to have, because some of their front row guys are getting a little older. So I expect to see some younger signings out of Chicago, Rob. And then real quick, the other one I want to talk about is NOLA Gold, Danny Lee going from San Diego to NOLA. Kane Thompson staying there. And we talk about, you know, me and Rob talk a lot about the stability factor. And, you know, you said it with LA, like they were kind of choppy, especially at the beginning of the season. They were trying to figure this out. Practices were, you know, started later than they should have. And guys were just coming in, and it was a lot of chaos. So that transition now, they shouldn't have any of that, those issues, knock on wood, going into year two. And their ownership is still the same, you know, so the top level guys are the same. You shouldn't have any of those practice issues, right? Those the signings will come. And same thing now, you still have Kane, and going back to Nola, you still have Kane Thompson there involved in the organization, so that's a stabilizing factor. And everybody knows Danny Lee and knows how good San Diego Legion has been with the availability, with the players he's had. So I think it's, you got to watch out for Nola. I think Danny Lee's going to bring a little more competitiveness to that Nola Gold team.
Yeah, I like Danny a lot. Here's what I like about this coaching move is that, remember, Corey Brown took a job, I think it was with the Highlanders, if I'm not mistaken, right, TJ?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So it wasn't, they didn't force, Corey Brown out. I think they would have liked to have had Corey Brown back if given the choice, but, not given that choice, having that taken away from them. And obviously that's a good coaching move for Corey himself. You can't blame him, man.
You're talking about the three guys that are out of coaching jobs in the MLR. One went to Edinburgh, one went to Saracens, one went to Highlanders. I don't think anybody exactly what we want.
Right.
We want to see them succeed here to move on to the next level.
Correct.
So having said that, I think getting somebody like Danny Lee is a nice transition. You got two Kiwis. Mm-hmm. You're going to have, I think there's a cultural mentality and a stylistic mentality amongst a lot of Kiwi coaches. And so I don't think there's going to be significant change, within those two realms for the team. I think what's going to be interesting is some of the changes that are happening off the pitch for the Nola Gold, because they do have there is a bit of shift in ownership. Tim is not, there's been more investment. Tim does not take as prominent a role as he has in the past. Terry Dupin is a principal owner. And he's a very gregarious individual, very different from Tim. And it'll be interesting to see how things go under, his watchful eye, because he does like to be a little bit more involved in day-to-day things, I believe, than Tim did. So it's going to be interesting to see how the team moves off the field, but you see some really great things, having said that, social media-wise from that team, and they're really promoting their player movements, promoting, all the things going on in New Orleans. So it's really interesting to see how those shifts, both on and off the pitch, will impact this team. First year they made the playoffs last year, but I got to think that the fan base wants to see a better result in 2025.
Absolutely. And, hopefully they'll be getting that result. All right. So now we're going to go on to the next question. Out of these coaching changes, what little bit we know of signings, what little bit of insider information we do have, we're going to go with who's going to have the most, a more successful season. TJ, if you want to start off.
Yeah. So I think this is going to be no surprise to a lot of people, because the New England Free Jacks, like you said previously, on paper, Rob, they've got probably the best opportunity to take hold of this league and really win a championship, regardless of like the players that are coming in or remaining. I think once you get out Scott Matthew, who was a great coach, I know that he's obviously heading off to somewhat greener pastures, but you get someone of the caliber with Ryan Martin, who I think is a brilliant signing. I think he held the position in 2021. He knows the landscape of the league. He knows the landscape and has the rapport with this organization. And he comes back into the fold with, I think, a wealth of knowledge that he's been able to get over the past few years. Like, I think the other thing to really keep in mind that some people may not be aware of, like, because they just see, he's signed with the team. He's also an assistant coach with Northland. And I know a few of the boys in Northland and the NPC who rave about this guy. He's rubbing shoulders with a lot of different players. He's gone over to Japan while guys are like Bowden Barrett and other people like that. He's able to get some coaching in over there. He's a tremendous coach that you get to really get like both sides of the coin. You get to get that real like staple of the organization that people can really relate to. He can come in and he won't mince his words. He'll come in and tell you exactly how it is. And also comes with a really smart rugby brain that can really implement and refine a lot of the great things that are coming into this organization. So I think if you look on paper, you can't go past the Free Jacks. Whether I will agree with you, Scott, is you've got, like I mentioned previously, Latham coming in as the new coach for Chicago. And funnily enough, you mentioned Todd Dammers. He was actually the Colts head coach of my rugby club in Australia for Souths. And he's come from, like you said, Rico Black Rams in Japan. He's coached a lot of different university teams in Sydney and a variety of different school teams as well. And I think that's the best kind of coach for this organization, being like teachers and coming in and really being able to mold these players together. That's the same thing that Ryan Martin comes from as well. So, yeah, I think on paper, Free Jacks, but you can't go past the Chicago Hounds as well. I think they're really going to make a good stand.
Absolutely. Rob, who do you think is making out the best here?
Well, you know, we are the Rugby Rant, but sometimes we think very similarly, and I'd have to agree with TJ.
Jesus Christ.
On the Free Jacks, and here's why.
I got to show you the cheese now?
It actually, yeah, please do. I need 10 minutes. but it actually has less to do with Ryan Martin coming in and Scott, you know, going out, and some of the other individuals like Will Webster leaving and George Petrakos leaving as well, with Senecal and Simoa coming in. It more has to do with what stays. And so what is that? Well, you got Mags at the top as CEO, and you got TK, Thomas Kinley, as the general manager. And what that does is that's a cultural foundational force, in that TK knows how to put together a team that will play well as a team. Yes, they had some stars, they had some studs, but I think that we've seen some of those studs really come through and shine and show their mettle because they play well together, right? And Mags has just put together such a great approach and product that fans love going to Fort Quincy. They enjoy the experience. They have a good overall enjoyment of a rugby day, that it really makes that team bond together and want to play well for the fans. And so it's due to some of those things that I really think that, you know, Ryan Martin has a great opportunity here. And I think we could very well see New England chomping at the bit to get back in that final and make a push for a three-peat.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, New England has had a wealth of talent year after year. They haven't had a mass exodus of players, and, you know, losing some players in key positions, they've signed new players in those positions who've excelled. Again, I think we talk from a top-down approach. Another team that hasn't wavered and has been stable in from ownership to the coaching level, right? And then coaches are going to come in and out, but same thing with the player level. They've been relatively stable, and they've made sure that when they're even changing venue, they're still doing the same things they're doing on game day. And that stability that I think really helps teams to say, you know, get the players comfortable with what's going on. And I believe that's been why most teams are successful in this league, to be quite honest. I would say, I think NOLA is going to be interesting this year. I think they have a talent level. I think they needed a palate cleanser of sorts to come in to rule the locker room a little bit. I think NOLA seemed to have a locker room led by a lot of senior players, which is nice. You need that voice, but I think you need that ultimate authority that Danny Lee can actually come in and give you to settle the guys down. So I think you're going to see NOLA be a little more dominant in the Eastern Conference than maybe they were this year. Because even this year, yeah, they were number two and they didn't squeak into the playoffs, but they had some games where their foot was coming off the throttle a little bit and they started to slip, and that's just the reality. That's not, you know, I'm not knocking anybody. That's just, you know, the results are what they are. And I think Danny Lee will change that a little bit in what their culture is. So most likely Free Jacks out of this whole list, but I'd say watch out for NOLA Gold.
No, I definitely agree with the NOLA Gold pick and Danny Lee. Like, I got to see San Diego play RFCLA in the last season at the Dignity Health Center. And mm-hmm. I think once you watch the film of first half and second half, they had a pretty really shit, I'll be honest, a really terrible first half. They just weren't connecting. And I'm not saying that Danny Lee's the guy to come in and fix everything. Like, there's a lot of pieces that happen, but he is a good guy that can come in methodically, pick certain attributes that you just make these couple of changes and then they come out humming. And that also comes from the experience they've got on the team, but you've got to have that person that's able to come in and really just delegate to the coaches and the boys and go, these are the two things we can fix. And then you just come out and you're able to smash in a second half.
And I think you see a lot of coaches and teams, Rob, sorry to interrupt, that, and I've talked about it on this program a lot, and Rob is, you know, thinks I'm on the right track with it, like adjustments. And we talk about it even at the national level. There's some coaches and some players who just can't make adjustments. And Danny Lee is a guy that he will come in at halftime and he will tear down the playbook and say, it's not working. We need to adjust to make sure it works. You know?
Yeah.
One thing I would say with regard to the no goal, you keep your eyes on, folks. And people who've watched this show know that I've supported the goal for a long time, but keep
Rob might get a start this season. If Cam Dolan goes down,
I'm talking to 50 about an associate contract just for a day. I think one of the things to keep your eye on is this. NOLA Gold were one of the least penalized teams. I think the second least penalized team overall in the league last year, but they had one of the most highly penalized yellow cards, right?
Huh.
If I'm not mistaken, one of the most penalized teams was San Diego. So, and when Scott talked about where NOLA struggled when they got yellow cards and they were playing a man down. And that's why they had a few games where they really screwed the pooch. The games where they had that stretch of seven or something like that, games on the hoof where they won, they really were mindful of those significant yellow cards. It'll be pay attention to their penalty count, see if it impacts their win and loss count on the season in 2025.
And I would argue this, though, the season before that and the season before that, NOLA had one of the highest penalty counts, you know, so it's, you know, cause they went, if you remember, Rob, they went into those seasons where they were neck and neck with New York. And when we were looking at statistics, it was like a really high penalty count. They seemed to have fixed it, but then they got those yellow cards, bringing them a man down, you know? So I wonder the other thing I want to say, I'll say this, and I will shout this person out. Scott Green, he does a lot of those West Coast games and he runs a tight offsides line. And we've talked about it, how players don't adjust to his offsides calls. And I'm not saying his calls are wrong. I'm just saying it's just like any other official. You have to adjust to the calls. So if they're not giving you the leeway, he's saying the line's a line and this is the line. A lot of those adjustments aren't happening where a guy's taking a half step back. So I wonder if it was a Scott Green offside penalty fest for San Diego last year.
Well, yeah, I think the one thing that you hear a lot of great players talk about is, like, you'll hear James Parsons talk about it all the time when he was playing, is you've got to make those adjustments as a player. Like, referees in this day and age, like, there's so many trial laws and other things that are coming in. You can't always be on kilter with everything. And if a referee makes a certain change or degree to a certain attribute of the gameplay, you've got to do that. You've got to sit there and you've got to go, okay, they're refereeing it this way, make that adjustment. Yeah, and I agree. It's something where you've got to really be cognizant of that and then go from there. A lot of players who come from, especially not from a rugby background, they don't have that prowess yet. They can't really go into that space and go, okay, adjust now. And that's where a guy like Danny Lee can really provide some insight. He's come into a system like the NPC team he coached for, I think it was the Hawke's Bay Magpies. Mm-hmm. On paper, they were a terrible team, but they were able to adjust, and then they were able to, like, really make a run of it in that particular season.
Yep. And again, adjustments on the field for the players, adjustments in the locker room for the coaches, and adjustments for the GMs and signing and letting go of players. Guys, I think we did a very good job with this so far. Again, if there's more changes, we might have to come back together and talk about it and add those specific teams in and redo our questions and our answers here, because maybe they'll change. You never know. Is Eddie Jones is going to show up and coach the Miami Sharks or something? I don't know.
We'll do round two, round three, round four, and then by the time the season, everything's changed.
Exactly. All of a sudden, Rob's starting, second row for NOLA, and then he gets traded to LA.
Oh, where's my checkbook? I'm putting the money on that team. Hey, come on.
But guys,
putting money for me to pull a muscle? Yes.
Yeah. So the last time I saw Rob play was 2 years ago when I came out to Chicago. Not only did he score a hat trick in his old boys match, the next day he couldn't turn his neck and he was going to be on camera. And he had to turn his body because he couldn't turn his neck. And he woke up and he immediately told me, yeah, I'm not feeling good right now. This isn't good. I don't know what I did. I'm like, well, maybe you shouldn't have actually played the old boys game yesterday too.
Who was that for? The Blaze?
Yeah, of course.
Scored a goddamn hat trick because the big guy was out there.
Right. Like if I'm turning around at 32 years old and playing a game for Santa Monica and waking up feeling like I'm run over by a truck, I don't know what I'm going to do if I do that and I'm playing an old boys game. I'm going to be screwed.
Just keep in mind I was 52 at the time, so I had a few years on you.
That's what I'm saying. Like if I get to even close to 40 and I play an old boys game, I think I might just like jump in a wheelchair and just call it a day.
The best is he was stretching before the match like that was going to help. Yeah, stretching now, like 5 minutes before the match. He hadn't stretched in 6 months, but stretching now is going to help him out.
That's all that matters. 5 minutes before the game, you're ready to go. Yeah, one calf stretch, one quad stretch, you're good. Let's go.
And a little bit of Tiger Balm.
You mean the whole bottle? Yeah, okay.
Exactly. All right, guys. I think this one is done and dusted. I really appreciate you having on. And of course, having TJ on again for this has to be the sixth or seventh time he's been on. Go check out the Bonus Point podcast. He's talking about all things down under there as far as rugby is concerned. Really good insight. He still has really good connections down there. And, you know, if you're not watching rugby in the Southern Hemisphere, you can get up to speed with the Bonus Point podcast. So please go out, take a follow, subscribe, listen, all that good stuff. And check out our YouTube page for back episodes. I'm almost halfway done with season two. Then I got season one that I'm going to put all the RPKs up. And also check out therugbyrant.com for all your blogging needs. Hammer, by the time this comes out, Hammer's Project Apollo blog will already be out, outlining Scott Lawrence's plan for the Moonshot 2031. I'm still having my Rugby 101 articles come out. Pierce Lobin has been doing some great articles. Adam Hughes and Rick Collins, same. And we're always looking for bloggers. We're looking for men. We're looking for women. We want your perspective on rugby. It doesn't have to be North American rugby. It could be any rugby or any top rugby topic you guys want to talk about. So anyway, thank you very much for watching, listening, however you guys support us. And we will see you at the next.
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable quality clothing right here in the USA, because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy. You're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.